Hey, this is Cap, and you're watching Thorin, the only man besides Richard Lewis who somehow found a way to get both League of Legends and Dota Redditors to hate him.
Right, this is going to be another episode of Esports Mount Rushmore, and my guest for this one is going to be Kyrie, who people might... Let's put all the cards on the table. He's not a famous player or coach or analyst, so if you're just someone who's coming from Dota, I don't blame you, you're not going to know him. He hasn't done anything in Dota before. But some people might know him from League, because in League he does Euro League, a show with Rich's Wrath, former H2K Rich, and he's obviously been on my Big Brains podcast. And if people don't know, he's someone who comes from my Discord, and I would just say is an enthusiastic. It's someone like me, where basically it's like if I had never done any public work. I still was a nerd. I used to follow all the games and watch all the matches and watch Quake and StarCraft and CS. And so the thing that makes Kyrie quite unique is not only has he followed these games for a long, long, long time, but he's also, like me, followed multiple games quite deep. So it means as a result, he has quite an interest in sort of like contrast, and he obviously can do the reference points. So if people don't know, everyone who's from League who clicks on this, mate, and didn't notice the full title is going to be disappointed, because spoiler, this is about Dota 2. So you might think, why are you doing that? Because what you don't know, and this is also how you know that we're like kindred spirits in some ways, is I do League because it's huge, and like I've already sort of, it's sort of like, what do you call it, sunken cost fallacy. I've invested so many hours now, I may as well just keep going, mate. Like, at this point, there's no point quitting, is there? But the joke is, I've always actually preferred Dota. I'm based like that. And also, if people don't know, Kyrie himself comes from Dota. That's his game as well. So what I thought we'd do is a piece of content where one of the reasons I have to bring Kyrie on my shows is I actually think when you're someone who is super deep in the game and trying to be like a fan expert, but you don't have to do the professional side, it just allows you to talk about the game in a way that other people can't. Like, they're worried about their relationships and, oh, you... Oh, we can't say that about him. He's a legendary player. Whereas we don't have to worry about that. So we thought what we'd do is a topic. I think it's a banger topic. It's basically, since TI is going on basically now, just starting again, boys. Famously, TI is one of the tournaments that I think it's actually the worst, in my opinion, of all the major esports for like their version of the World Championship not being won by some of the best players ever. Because I've always said Dota is brutal in the sense that, like, in League of Legends, it was pretty bad as well. But I also think in that game, it almost works out for itself, because since it doesn't have an open circuit in League, it means that if you're a casual fan, you don't know that Knight was supposed to win Worlds, but he didn't. You go like, I don't care about the LPL. Whereas like in games like CSGO and Dota, the nightmare is like someone like Nico or RTZ goes godlike, and so I said RTZ instead of RTZ there, whatever, I've already fucked it at the beginning, I don't even care, oh, hit champions, they're all called champions, you twats, who cares anyway. So the point is, when you see them, those people, like the absolute best player in the world in May, it's depressing knowing that they're made just like 3 months away and then they don't win it. So I think being as at least in CS, at least we, most years we had two majors and back we had three, it means that in CS eventually most people won it. But I can tell you right now, as we'll show you in this episode, the amount of players who are amazing Dota players who haven't won, like, I'm not joking, I'll take the top five players to not win TI, and I think they can go head to head with the top five players to win TI, and that's how good the list is. So I don't actually know which four key respect, but the premise is going to be the four best players according to him who haven't won the international. And obviously, spoiler, I actually think if you look at the current crop, they're probably not going to be winning this year, but who knows, maybe one of them goes on like my death video last year in League and fulfills it and actually wins anyway, which, by the way, I totally did not in any way predict, as you know. But if you ever watch that video now, because I know how to like craft wordsmanship, you do get the vibe if you watch that video back now, like I'm hinting that he's going to win, even though I'm not at all, by the way. Like, I just sort of allowed that to be there just in case, you know. So, okay, right, start us off, Kyrie. Famously, actually, if people don't know, I often tell people if they ask me, unless they do it, just do it without asking, don't tell me the four names, actually. Let's just find out in the episode. It'll be fun for me as well. So who's the first name?
So the first name is the prodigal son of Eastern Europe, Ramses 666.
Okay.
The great Eastern carry player, most known for playing on VP.
For a long time,
and
yeah.
Now playing on the rehashed VP lineup known as Nine Pandas, with many of the similar faces. But
Pasha and all
names.
Those guys, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's the very first name. So, yeah,
by the way, just at the outset, give me like your preamble. What's your version of that? Like, is Dota your original game? Was it the one you were the most into? How does that stuff work out?
So Dota is actually the game that I play. I actively participated. Okay. And everything I know from like learning about like strategy games and how to model games, I learned from StarCraft, Brood War, and Dota first before I even knew League and later on games. So the whole idea of like economies, like gold distribution, laning, side lanes, map advantages, I all learned that all from watching like Dota, and then I came into League much later on because that was the way I already modeled it in my head. I have an advantage, the fact that I was very early on into Dota. I've watched apart from TI1, I've watched all of them live. Like, I've seen every single TI, like, from start to end. And so I've consistently been with, like, all the historical, like, storylines. And so I feel like I've got a really good feel for, like, Player Pete, who was actually, like, the carries in any given time. One thing I will preface with this is on the Mount Rushmore, there is no captain players.
We're not doing anyone just for, like, non-player. It's not, like, essentially, these are carries and real skilled players and offlaners and stuff, right? Right, okay.
Because I think it's impossible unless you know intrinsically what was going on inside those teams.
Yes.
And the draft component of Dota is so dominant.
Yes.
Basically, captains that did not win or failed to win would basically make up a lot of their Mount Rushmore because of the importance of it. It just has such an effect on, like, a draft. And also a lot of captains pick players and there's just too much.
Right.
So they have been removed from the equation. It's basically just your own individual play of actual inside the server. So I was saying, this is Ramses 666, and he is probably one of, if not the one of the most famous non-TI winners, because he has the distinction of not only is he not one TI, but he has no TI top placings.
Yeah.
He has only reached 56.
Now, if people don't know, famously, this team so many times comes in as a top three favourite, but then they always blow the bracket stage, right? They always just basically fuck up against anyone, it seems like. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you're a favourite going in, top placing is like fourth, third, second, or first. So you might be yourself disappointed with it, but those are, like, if you come in as a favourite, that's usually where you end up about. He's came in as probably the team of the year once and the second best team once, and he came 56th twice, and then he has a bunch of other ones, but that's the furthest he's ever made. Now, to give you an idea of the pedigree of what the rest of this guy's career is, this guy has won 5 Dota Majors. Now, these are the most important tournaments outside of TI. He has won 5, which is a joint record with the likes of Puppy and his, like, other shared, like, teammates. He has 13 top 3s at Majors and 15 top 4s. And in he came second 5 times, and I think in the 4 of those, it went to game 5. So in almost all the major finals he played in, his team was either, like, in it to win it or very, very close. And the reason I talk a lot about Ramsey's greatness is because he was one of the revolutionaries in 2018 of the fighting carry playstyle, where the carry would be near the end, you would farm near the team, and he would constantly group with the team on specific item timings to get areas of the map. It's really funny how, you know from CSGO, it was called the Virtus Pro Plough. It was basically like a pressure, and if you can't stop the plough, well, in Dota it was the exact same thing. VP would basically hit you with these timing attacks, and if you couldn't resist them, or if you couldn't beat them, that was it, GG. They were so dominant in the 2018 season, and Ramses was probably one of the crazy, like, parts of why it was dominant. And the other part of what makes him even great was he was one of the main reasons that made the team so flexible, because he could move, not only could he play that very fast-paced uptick style, he has the ability to just play the traditional carry picks, where it is the farming on one side of the map, away from everybody else, like gaining, like, huge amounts of gold, item leads, and then coming in and grouping with the team. He was an extremely flexible player. He's, like, famous for his, like, late-game execution and his laning. He's, like, one of the, like, best laning, like, carries in terms of, like beating out enemy offlaners and creating massive gold disparities. To give you an example, there's a very famous lane dominant carry in Dota called Lifestealer, and I think Ramses has played it 80 times and he has a 75% win rate on the pick, which is an absolutely absurd, like, number of games. And this is against, like, the best teams in the world and, like, top bracket placings. VP from late 2017 to all the way through 2018 was the team that defined that era. They were the team to beat. They won the majority of the tournaments that they attended in, and even the ones they were at, when the team was beating them, it was in epic fashion. You go look at, like, Puppy's victories over them, Kuro's victories over them at the Chinese Super Major. They are some of the best games of Dota ever played involved VP. They were even the rivals to the original OG Dynasty with S4, Ana, and No-Tail on it. They were like the guys playing them in like major finals. But for some strange reason, they were the victim to the TI curse, where they would come in as one of the favourites and it would all go wrong. And they unfortunately were victims of their own success, where the strategies that they employed would get nerfed. Right. Valve would actively nerf the things that they were doing, and you can only rewind the clock or learn things or do things so many times. The meta would just end up in a place at TI that, yeah, they were still a good team, but sometimes they just weren't able to do that high-paced tempo play that they want, or other teams that just ended up more coordinated, or their like strats ended up overcoming them for whatever reason. The thing is, if you just look at his longevity, he's still a top carry player to this day, which is in Dota and how tumultuous that region is.
Incredible, yeah.
Yeah, so that's almost like a five year peak. The reason I really do think, though, partly what cements him is he is one of the unique things, people in Dota, where in Dota it's very hard to have a definitive like best player at any given time. There's usually a pocket of players, or like usually have to be on like a top team to even be like seen as like a great player. But for the 2018 season, he was actually probably the best player and defined an entire era of Dota around how he played carry, and everyone basically had to look at what Ramses was doing, how he was farming on the map and playing with his team, and learn to do that, or like bring an aspect of that into their game.
Basically, as we've just pointed out, obviously this guy hasn't won TI, that's the whole point of the show, but when you consider how many people have won TI, all those different players and teams that have won, even though he's never not only won TI, he's never even come second, third or fourth, which is where all the money is, it's to make a top heavy tournament. He is 41st all time in Dota 2 prize winnings. So that essentially shows you that essentially everything that wasn't TI, this guy and his team just dominated. Like as you're talking about, like the success level is fantastic. This isn't even just like we're talking about, like there's people in Dota where like they had a year where they were the best player or the best team and they didn't win. This guy, like you say, had like two or three cracks at it and it didn't happen. So here's my question for you. If someone hasn't watched him play intently, maybe this all VP player, they weren't a fan of the carries, I don't know, right? Put it this way, and the most classic name that could be on this list is obviously Arteezy, the Canadian player, right, for EG. Now, one thing I always say about Arteezy, which is, in my opinion, why, like, he deserves a whole documentary on the fact he hasn't won TI, is because it's almost like he is cursed. Like, when I would even watch most of the TIs, I'd be like, dude, he's actually playing really well. Like, what the hell is this? Like, sometimes I've even seen him lose the elimination games where he was, like, the best player on the team. So, everyone will look at it and go, ha, Arteezy's the loser. Look, all these people who were his teammates have won. Is it the same with Ramses? Like, is he actually playing well at these TIs? Is he one of the ones that's choking? Because obviously, if you're the carry and you choke, you can blow the whole tournament, right?
So, they have fallen victim to some of, like, the great TI runs of, like, the era. The most devastating, so I could go through them. In 2017, they lost to the Liquid team that went on to the entire event,
yes.
And they have the infamous 70-minute long Mega Minions hold where they blow like a 28,000 gold lead. And put it this way, right? They lost that game and it still went to three games. It's an absolutely bonkers like series. And the idea that they choked it out, whenever you see something as disastrous as that, usually it isn't one person, it's usually it's a series, a snowball of like choking. Ramses doesn't actually tend to have big defining like fail like moments where like he gets like caught,
right.
Things like that, because the team was so reliant on being like grouped and coordinated, it didn't really happen. What tends to happen is they would group for a 5v5, they would be like 10,000 gold up, they've got maybe an Aegis or something, and they team fight, and the other team just like executes in such a way, and VP under execute, and then the momentum shifts backwards, and they've got all these early game picks, and the other team have all these late game scaling picks, and it's just an uphill battle from there. And that's part of the beauty from that team and Ramses' style. If you look at a bunch of their picks, they were actually playing on a clock that is like, for the first 30 minutes of this game, we're strong. But if it goes by 30 minutes, even if we've got big gold leads, we could actually be playing like uphill. And if you look at their win percentage as a team, how often they executed it, particularly as a five-man coordinated unit, it's absolutely ridiculous. He does have the shared distinction. I don't believe any of his teammates won TI without him or went on to like greener pastures, because a bunch of them all basically just stuck together and got like new mid laners and stuff like that. But they're like, it's like the three-man/4-man VP core is basically are still together to this day. So that's not really happened to him the same way as it's happened to the aforementioned Arteezy, so he's not gotten to that. But the sad thing about Ramses is he's going to be at this TI, his thing is a bit of a setting sun, as in like their time VP and that team's like era and time, because they're now no longer the definitive best Eastern European team. They're now the second or third best team, probably the second best, and it's very, very hard to win from that region, because the best team, like Na'Vi before it, tends to define that region and the other people in that region so regularly. That's why the qualifiers coming out of Eastern Europe are so insanely competitive and stacked, because all the teams are very, very, very close together. But because they can be a little bit, not so much in, they like, not so much copycat region, but they get very used to like how to beat each other. And so now he's not on the defining team. I think Ramses, more than anyone, like his time to win is like behind him. And it was, what makes it so shocking is the way they lost. It's no top placing. That's what I'm saying. They didn't even lose in an epic third place bracket finish. It was, they really did fumble the ball really badly.
Now, the reason you alluded to it earlier, but let's more explicitly ask about it. The reason why this is so crazy is because the rest of the Dota circuit, and I don't care if anyone goes, no one cares about that. Like, real professionals who were like great players still play and play the game in front of them. Like, they don't just go, I'm taking the year off. And so, like, that's just a fan thing they say. Like, to some degree, people care, right? It's insane, this guy's record at the majors outside of TI. Like, remember, as you said, the majors are the second most important tournament. And this guy, like, the joke is he like trips over and comes top three every fucking time, like for years and years and years and years and years. And that's another thing, by the way. I notice people do that unfair thing in Dota where like the fucking Super Bowl or whatever, they act like just winning the biggest prize justifies everything. It's like, there's a lot of people, mate, with like one TI. It's like, where's all your majors, mate? What am I waiting for? You got the one TI. You didn't finish your career. It's not Super Mario. You didn't complete the game. Like, you still have to show me greatness. So the sad thing is, everything outside the TI about this guy's career implies like, he's not even just good. Good dude, he should probably be like a top 10 player of all time or something, right?
Yeah, like that is the thing. And it's like, and the point I was saying earlier, he has like a distinct period where he like revolutionized like Dota, the same way as Alliance had that effect in the game in 2013, where once Alliance came to Dota, no team could go back. Pandora's box was open. Everyone either had to learn to do and like beat the things that Alliance was doing. That's the same way for VP. When VP arrived, everyone had to learn how to beat this team. Everyone had to learn, all the carry players had to look at their farming patterns and be like, yeah, I could be making an extra 100 GPM over in this specific area of the map, but it's on the opposite side to my team. I could be right next to my team and group them for an objective, and we can do this a timing attack and win a big objective, towers, setups for Roche, take camps off the enemy. And that is just, it seems so simple now, but the regularity of it and the systemicness of it was so crazy. And it was the fact that, like, he could do both. Was he could play the illusion-based heroes, like Terrorblade, to an absolutely staggering like level. It's one of his like best heroes. But then he could play all these like lane defining sustain champs, like the Juggernauts, like the Lifestealers, like there's a... So his level of versatility was amazing. And for me, VP, much later on, other great carry players came out of the region, like Yutoro, who has won TI himself on Team Spirit, who are, they're better than him. But at the time he played, no one could replace him. You could not go and get another like carry player that was doing what he was doing in Eastern Europe and arguably probably the world. And so for that reason, for the era he played in, 2017 to 2018, he is probably the defining like player of that, and that's where he earns his place on the Mount Rushmore.
Right, who's number two then? Obviously, by the way, these aren't in order. These are just we're doing four.
Yeah.
So who's the second one?
The one of the chosen four, the one of the great ones of Chinese Dota, Somnus, other better known from 2015 as maybe the greatest Chinese mid laner, the defining great player of the post-burning ROTK era.
Let me ask a setup question. Here's the setup question, right? Because if people don't know, this actually is one of my favourite players, if people don't know. And also, by the way, we'll get into it, but when we're talking about not winning TI, he did it by like the smallest margin imaginable, so it's also more brutal. But I will say this, there's a piece of setup to this story, which goes, it's almost like this guy was an anime protagonist who was like, you know, the chosen one who's supposed to come, like you say, to be the next like burning Ferrari 430 type figure who's going to carry Chinese Dota to the top. Because there's even that crazy storyline, if people don't remember, where when he was in LGD, initially they moved him off to their like farm team. It's just a little team that became a team called CDEC, and after that went to second. And that was the team he was like playing with, and like he was like, you know, the star of it. And then he came back to the LGD team. And then famously for him, if you look again, individually, he has been mega. But the difference is, unlike the guy we just talked about, Ramses, this guy has an unbelievable amount of heartbreak runs at TIs, like where you do the top four run and everything's looking so... Basically, right before the match you lose, everything looks like they're going to win. Holy shit, they're going to win this. And always it's heartbreak with this guy. Always. So go on, give me your side on it. Why is he on the list?
So... maybe it's probably just the beginning of the modern mid lane player. The person who wasn't relying on specific picks, he wasn't relying on just draft advantages, he wasn't relying on people coming to his lane every single time. He was the original like Swiss Army knife do-it-all mid lane player. This guy was famous on two like very diametrically opposed. So in 2015, it was known as the Storm Spirit versus SF meta, right? Okay, where you had the great Storm Spirit player of the era, who was Samael, and it was all about tempo play, assassinations, in your face, outplaying you. And then you had Arteezy, who was the SF, the Shadow Fiend, and that was all about lane domination, huge farm advantages, timing attacks, grouping with the teammate and being an unstoppable frontline carry. Well, a little thing people forget is each of those players couldn't really play the other person's pick, but maybe could. Maybe was at the time probably the other great Storm Spirit player and the other great SF player of the era. And that was in 2015, and maybe it's still a top laning like mid laner now. He is still one of the best laning like players to this day, and he has been on a plethora, because people would say, oh, he's always on LGD. Yeah, he was always on LGD with lots of different teammates. In Chinese Dota, it is a revolving cast of, like, people, because people just retire, join another team, unretire, join another team. It's an absolute joke of a scene. And so, when you look at outside of that, so, in 2018, the year we just spoke about with VP, he actually managed to get two major wins. So he won one of the majors in that year. And he has four top four finishes at TI. And then three of those, they lost to the eventual champion. So he lost to the Evil Genius team of 2015. He lost to OG, obviously, in the 2018 finals. And he also lost to, I can't remember the other one, but he lost to another one. And I think, again, it was on LGD. I think it might have been 2017 when they lost to TL. He has defined an era and a change in Dota all of himself. He is dominant to a degree that it cannot even be like joked about. Almost every single like team has to think about maybe in like draft. He is one of those like specialized players where he will garner bans unto himself. And what a little thing that a lot of people don't really give credence for is how hard it is to consistently be good in Dota every single year, year to year, no matter what changes around you. He did have a little period where he retired and he wasn't really, well, not so much retired, but he wasn't actively playing as much. But his like form across the board is an absolute joke. For example, I very rarely see like maybe getting like crushed in lane, like multiple solo kills. He very rarely loses his team. And to beat him, you have to play to like levels that are and a standard of Dota that is borderline not seen. Like what OG had to do to conquer maybe in that TI final was unbelievable. Like how much he wanted to win that final and how well he was playing that final was. It was crazy. It's probably one of the singular greatest losses by a player in a final. And he's one of those folk where the other star players on his team really did let him down. Unfortunately, he was a victim of AME having a TI collapse. FY was like his coordinated partner in crime, the great Chinese support player. His picks kind of got figured out. OG managed to begin to do drafts that they were able to neutralize other players and make them less effective, but they had to beat Mavie. Like, they had to beat him in the actual server. I'd be hard-pressed to not have him on the list. I think, because, and this is a scary thing, outside of his major wins, he actually only has two Tier 1 LAN wins. So if you go on Liquipedia, they like stratify the importance of tournaments by tier. So like TI and Major are Tier 1s. But outside of that, he only actually has two other tournament wins. But it's just a plethora of like top placings. And it's actually just the consistency of his plays. Because all throughout his career, he didn't always have the best teams. But when he did have like good teams, like he made up a massive proportion. If anyone wants to see an example, go watch him be eliminated on RNG last year from TI. It takes the enemy team 110 minutes to destroy the base because he just won't lose the game. That is like how much he was like just holding on to it for.
On the point you made about that, obviously we're talking about TI8, the famous one where OG and then played the amazing upper bracket final and then the final. By the way, these are two matches where if you even vaguely like Dota 2, you've never seen them, like maybe you're a modern day fan, go back right now and watch them. Literally, they are two of the best matches ever played. They're insane. Like everything's awesome about them. But the problem is, I'll give the obvious contrast because obviously since you're from my Discord, we know like what each person's into. The joke of that run of PSG is it's like the one where a few years ago in the English Premier League, Liverpool came second, but the amount of points they had meant like every season except two or something, they would have been first by far because they had like 98 points or something absurd that like... So essentially, I would say the same thing about that PSG LGD team. The way they played in a second place loss, dude, was better than some of the teams I saw win TIs in past years. Like, it was insane how good those matches were. Like, they really were like example of like teams just pushing each other to the limit, and he was fucking sick, like you say. This isn't one like he blew the game, like, oh, he fumbled it. Like you say, it was other people, and in fact, people like Army were sort of like people already knew that was in their arsenal that they could just fuck up a game like that and just have times where they fell apart. And even that angle you said earlier of like people will try to be like, yeah, but it was just on LGD, bro. There's none of the players from 2015 are in fucking 2018. What are you talking about? Like, yeah, here's the difference. LGD 2015 has loads of legendary players that you know, of course, like some of the greatest players. The one in 2018, the joke is they're becoming famous in this team. They weren't some like the greatest players of all time. So really, he is the defining factor, and I'm with you. Like, his consistency is bonkers. Because, like, as far as I can tell, he's one of those players that actually is a bit frustrating in Dota, where it's like either what teams they choose to join or not join, or if they just feel like retiring, they take themselves out of the servers, the joke key. Like, no one ever actually stops them in the game. They just choose to not play or to play for some shitty team or to be on the outskirts in some like seventh best team. Like, I feel like to me, I know what you mean about the resume. I've actually got that many trophies, but like, in terms of like body of work, I mean, he easily makes this list for me. He's mega. Like, and like I say, I thought the TI run, that is the most heartbreaking one ever. For me, I know he's had a lot of them, he's had a lot of the top four ones, like you say, but that particular TI8 one, especially because I'm just going to say this, right? Even though OG won the next year, they won in totally different fashion. I don't think OG ever played like that before or after, mate. Like, that was like, that was the craziest, like, you know, like I joked that they sold their souls or somebody to win that one. It was ridiculous how they won that.
And the thing is, you can almost go as like a through right line through like maybe his career. And you will see, like, ups and downs. But what is so crazy is, like, you even look at, like, as, like, down periods. And a great thing about Dota is you can actually, like, watch, like, matches, like, live in the client. Yes. And you can see, like, what people are, like, clicking and what they're doing. Even if you, like, go, like, watch, like, the not-so-great, like, games or, like, the times when his, like, team's not losing, you can still see that individually he's, like, an amazing, like, player. And he was playing in, like, an ultra competitive period of like China, you have to remember Mabe was still one of the guys that caught the second rise of like the newbie team with like Hal when he came out of retirement and things like that. So he's played like a long, long time. He actually only has like one, apart from the fact that like he didn't get more LAM wins, which is like an afterthought because sometimes you can be circumstanced. The one team I think, not so much he blew it, but it's because he was the kind of the figurehead of the team. He created a super team called Elephant Gaming, and it had Paparazzi himself, FY, and Super on it. And they made a run at like TI. And individually, he played like pretty good at that TI. And he like his individual game was fine, but that team not working was probably this, arguably like one of the last like great chances like he had. Funnily enough, he is actually at this TI yet again. He was the benefactory of the Chinese qualifier. So he is here, once again, with his partner in crime, FY, going to attempt to make another run at it. But I would say they're on a much outsider's chance than any other year.
Right.
And I'm not so sure they've got the PCs that are required to make it through, because the TI format changes have made it a bit more like rigorous, getting from like stage to stage to stage. But focus on Mabe on who that, and that's where I would kind of move him away from Ramsey's. Whereas in the Ramsey's teams in that has failures, Mabe actually at TI, having not even won it, might be one of the best TI performers. It just and the end result, because
just aggregate over how many times he went and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it just the end result just didn't get him there, yeah.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean by that. It's like famously, even before Simple and CSGO won the major, I used to say I actually already was the best player at majors, because if you ever went and looked, it's kind of like what I said earlier about the amount of people who have a TI and then what else do you have in the cabinet? Like, the real problem is there's a lot of people that have won TI and then they had a bunch that were like, whatever's after that. Like, if they finished 13th place every time, like, the actual like sheer number of times this guy had a real crack and it's ridiculous, right? The last question I have is this. If you take all the resume stuff off the table, you only, like, nameplate off, you're just looking at the player daughter for his whole career, would he, forget this, would he be, like, near the top of an all-time best players ever to player daughter? At least for a Gary role?
From mid?
Or mid, yes, mid.
Yeah.
By the way, that's the other problem, if you're a league fan. I've been carried just as in you are one of the players who metaphorically carries the game, not specifically the one position. Yeah, sure.
No, because he actually does play, like, that's, he's one of those guys that, like, for example, he plays, like, the Morphling, which is the dual people. Outside of anything in the game, just what goes on in the game, he might be a candidate for the best player of all time. He's one of the people you put on, like, on a list. He probably is. Like,
because what you said earlier, I think, is actually quite apt as well. People really underestimate, if they're not from Dota, specifically from the carry roles, one and two position, it's very rare that people put together like 5 or 6 year runs and be like super insane. Like, in fact, the joke is half the time you have to like transition to be a bloody offlane and then eventually you support once you lose your hands, don't you? That's what everyone does. So like, that's the part that I think is mad underrated. Cause when you start putting together that little list, like you're doing there, Kira, the joke is, this is also why I think RTC like in some ways is overrated and underrated. Like again, he would be on that list as well. Cause look how many fucking years he's done it for. So right. Okay. Here's the question then. Who is number three?
So number three is probably the strangest players, because I like to stick to people who are carries, like traditional, like hard, like carry roles, because in that sense of what I produce. But this player has provided too many teams their like essence, stability, foundationals, draft support. He's probably one of the most flexible players in all of Dota. Is the prodigious Swedish player Zai, who now plays offlane for TL. Zai's offlane pedigree kind of like speaks for itself. So just outside, he's won 3 majors. Independent of that, he has 13 top fours at majors across 4 different teams. And he has 5 TI top fours. However, he has never played a final.
As you said, the key thing there, I think, the modifier is the number of teams. He didn't just sit in one team. He's been in any team he's been in the Mega pretty much.
Yep. Yeah, and he's done it. Oh, the other distinction is he's done it across like two regions, because he's played on the North American stacks, he played in the European like stacks, and he also played in like the mixed teams of like Team Secret, and he has been a defining part of so many of those great teams. This year alone, right, Zai made like 7 finals and lost all of them. But in almost all of the finals, he was like one of the best players, even on like a losing team. And Zai started playing in 2014, when on the EG team, making top 3 at that TI, and he was literally, he was playing support on that team. Like, he switched positions to like make that team work. So this guy's like flexibility is absolutely unbelievable. What he's probably one of the smartest like players and one of the best draft enabling players of any of the offlane players. If you go look at how many different distinct carry and offlane, because it's a dual lane role, it's a position 4, which is the other support and offlaner, how many different combinations of players. For example, he was playing offlane with Kuroke, right? And now he's, which was a great like offlane of its like era, he's played 5 different iterations beyond Kuroke, and that was in like 2015. So the amount of different teammates Zai's had and the amount of different teams he's taken to the top, a lot of it just like speaks for itself. And then that's without even focusing on his individual gameplay, which is amazing. Like, he might be one of the clutchest players, like, and coldest light players to have ever played like Dota. No matter the scores or the deficits, it doesn't actually ever look like Zai mentally breaks down. And offlane is like a mental break role, because there are periods of time in offlane where like it's feast or famine. You are either getting a little or you're getting a lot, but in the ones where you get a little, you're like, your net worth is wrecked. Like, it is a very, very, very mentally strenuous like role. And if you just look at Zai's career and you look at all the different teams he's enabled and the teammates he's played with, it all just speaks for itself. He's probably a candidate for one of the best offlane players of all time, and like, probably a candidate for one of the best like Dota 2 players of all time across the averages of his career.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to ask you about, actually, since, as you mentioned, one of the very interesting things about him is he's basically like the ultimate fill player. When you're making a team, like, you can change players because he can just swap positions. He's just so good at them all. I was actually going to ask you which you go with, because like, one thing about him as well, he's clearly a cerebral player. So I was going to ask which you thought he was better at, support or offlane. But I was going to say, that's one thing I always thought was mad about his career. So people remember that first EG, right? That was the one where no one would shut the fuck up about how amazing the universe was as an offlaner. But the joke is, I actually think I was the better offlaner, but like, for that team, he just played support, didn't he? It was him and PPV with just hard support. So, like, what do you think? I mean, you've sort of said up there, I was going to say, should be a contender for best offlaner ever, right? He's a fucking sick player at that role. And if people don't know what makes that role so interesting, if you're from other games and you only tangentially watch Dota, that's probably the most interesting of the roles, because it can essentially, I mean, you know this, part of how I actually conceptualize my analytical models for esports came from Dota. So, you know, when I do CSGO and I do the different roles, I essentially use a concept of like resources similar to like the lane structure. So I also do the same thing. My 3 position, your offlaner, I always say that's like the swing position in a team. Like, if I'm in a super team of like fraggers in Counter-Strike, maybe the 3 position in my case is actually a star as well. Like, Zai also could farm like a motherfucker and be like a carry on the map. But also, if you need to for the comp, that's a position that can be a supportive element. You can have your 2 traditional carry in the mid, and then he's maybe more with the supports, especially when you think of when went to those different metas. So what do you think? What's the best style for Zai? And like, is he the best offlaner ever for you?
So the problem is of the 2 different styles, or the 3 different like offlane styles, he's probably not on any of them the best individual, but across the aggregate, he's the one that can do it all. And that is where it lies. But I'm not saying, like, for example, he played offlane Naga Siren this year, which is almost an entirely universal carry pick.
Yes.
And he played it in the offlane this year and was like crushing people with it. He was like one of the best, like Broodmother, which is like a zookeeper, like pushing, where you take over one area of the map and you just like farm everything in that area and you just dominate it. He was one of the best like Broodmother players, but the Broodmother players are split between people who built aura items to help push, and then the carry people who built like lots of damage items to just kill people. And like, Zai could do both. He could, like, either, didn't matter which version it was, he would like know which to build in the game to result in the win. He has like that famous game where he starts building all the damage items and he just backdoors the enemy base and like wins them like this crazy like epic game. And he's like not even like phased, he's just like, oh, I always had it in the bag. his Darkseer, probably one of his most famous picks. It's there's obviously it's one of the ones that has got a famous exit game where Team Secret lose to VP in 2015 TI, where Zai is just on his hands and knees trying to keep the map together with Arteezy. And they're just trying to stand tall and stop the slow decay of the base falling to pieces. And he's still one of the best Darkseer players.
As you say, by the way, that's another thing that's worth pointing out. Just like Arteezy, actually, most of the time it wasn't him doing the choking. If anything, these are the two guys where it's more like you put their back against the wall. They're just like fucking Matrix, like blocking every bullet, trying to save themselves, but they still get eliminated. They just like, can't do anything. They're just in hell.
And you were talking about prize pool winnings. Zai has the highest of any non-TI winner, which is, like, I'm pretty sure it's...
Oh, it's 16th. That's insane to be 16th without winning, yeah.
Yeah. Zai has
like, he's ahead of Sumail, put it that way, guys. Like, and some of the, like, first greatest winners of all time. I know it's ridiculous, isn't it?
And outside of the majors, and, like, I think he's won 13 or 14 Tier 1 events, just separate, to like those, so like the third most important events that you can win in Dota, he's won like 13 other like tier one lands. Like, this guy has played for so long at such a high level, I can actually barely remember down periods, and I actually can't remember if he's ever went to a team and it was worse. Like, I can't think of a team Zai went to and it wasn't instantly better because he was on it. For example, here another one, he probably wasn't that famous like on the solely like engage like meta offlaners. When Magnus became like a massive like power pick in like the offlane, it was like Zai winning like the TI like finals with like massive RPs and like niche with Nisha, that was like that like core of the team. You know, it was a Zai engage into a Nisha assassination attempts like all over the map. Like, he is probably, like, if you were to draft players tomorrow and you're drafting an offlaner first, if you're not picking one of the, like, the carry offlane players because that's how you want to play the game, you're going to pick Zai. I don't know who else you would pick, because the crazy thing is there's not anyone else like him, because your skill set is just so hard to do.
The other thing as well is this is another player where, man, the amount of chances to win TI is criminal. Like, the joke is he had three just in fucking secret. Because there was obviously this 2015 one you talk about where they, like, in the summer, they just cracked it. They would win all the lands. And famously, they just blew it in the most underwhelming fashion ever. Then there was the later ones with, like, the Nisha Poppy lineup where it was, like, one year they just came fourth. And then the next one, the 2020 one, spoiler, there's a reason why there wasn't TI that year. Like, anyone who was on that team, Nisha, all the, like, I feel bad for all those guys because it's, like, that was one of the years where they were dominating so hard, but there just wasn't a TI. So, like, it's also kind of brutal because, like we say, it's not even like he's the one fucking up, but, man, his teams, they just seem like when they get to TI, it just never works out. Something always gets crucially, just blows up in their face or something.
During, like, the COVID, like, TI, like, with Team Secret, they played Team Spirit in the lower bracket before, like, Team Secret, Team Spirit upset PSG. That orc's curse, by the way, it is. Another TI.
That in secret may as well just fuck right off at this point. Like, it doesn't matter how good your teams are, you're never allowed to win. You're not allowed to win.
Yeah. It's a BO3 in the lower bracket, and it went all the way to three games, and some of the games are really, really close, and it was thin margins. Like, and that's the really scary thing about Dota. Particularly at TI, it comes down to really small margins sometimes. Like, you miss a smoke timing, you know what I mean? You, like, don't catch, like, someone on a ward. You're literally just about to take Roshan and, like, the engaged player blanks in and kills you all. Like, it comes down to, like, the minute, like, details. But unlike Ramsey, if you just look at all this guy's, like, top placings, and that, like what I talked before, he wasn't, like, choking. Sometimes nobody on his team choked. They just lost to the better team on the day. And that's fine. Like, that happens at, like, TI sometimes. Just the other people figure out the meta, they figure out the picks, or they're a little bit better than you on the specific picks, and you just can't get it over the line. That's fine. And that's the scary thing about Zai's career, is he's not on the setting sun. Zai could win TI this year. He is the second favourite going into this tournament to win the whole thing, like second or third. They're like they're one of the best teams in the world. And he's still going. And it doesn't look like it's going to stop.
That's also what's sick about this list, if you notice, is this is why I do think the International is the cruelest tournament in all of esports. Because some of these players like already are like the greatest players of all time, even without the TI win. And then the longevity some of them have who didn't win is like, bro, like, yeah, like 5 or 6 years to do it. Like, it's one thing if you had like one or two cracks, you know, like that happens, like if someone's on like one good NFL team and they have that one Super Bowl they could have won. These are just heartbreaking how some of these guys lose. And like we say, it's one thing if like you just shit the bed yourself, okay, then you've got no one else to blame. It's when you, when like, you keep changing teams even. Like, the other thing about some of the Zai lineups, mate, is some of the lineups he's joining, like, these are also like the greatest winners of all time. Like, these aren't supposed to choke. Like, he's joining other TI winners, other like amazing carries. Like, his career actually, like, of all of them, might be the most confusing of them all. Like, it's actually brutal this guy never won.
And like, you, when you see it, like, put through like certain lenses, it's actually just bonkers. Like how, the way Zai's like career, like if you took the 2014 Zai and you showed them to somebody, I don't think anyone would have looked at that year of 2014 and go, he's going to be the player that is like going, that is going to define like X amount of great teams over the next, the later half of the decade. You know what I mean? Like, Zai was a great player in 2014, 2015. And then you tell people, yeah, by the way, by the, when 2018 and 2019 comes around, Zai's going to be defining that decade. Or, yeah, and when 2023 comes around, he's going to be one of the stoic pieces leading, like, the, another great, like, lineup. Like, if, put it this way, if you were to make a top 10, like, list, top 10 list team, right, of, like, all-time great teams, Zai would probably be, him and Papa would be on the most of those individuals.
He's going to have like three or four or something.
Yeah, that's true. Which is when you put it like that, you begin to see like just what he is individually supplying to a team. And I don't even know what he's like personally. He seems like just a quiet like Swedish like player. I don't even know if he like calls in his like current team right now. But just based on his individual level, it's crazy what he will extract from the map, even when he's behind. That's another thing. See, if I see like Zai come out of a bad lane, I'm not worried. I know he'll find some way to nickel and dime, to scrape together, to be as effective as he possibly can. Where there's other like great offlane players, like for example, Team Spirit probably have the other defining great offlane player of the era, Collapse, right? Who is just a like offlane like carry player. He is out to like dominate you, right? But when Collapse is behind, I'm a bit more like, well, not looking too good here, boys, because he's more of a front runner than he is a guy that like, you know, played from all different levels of gold. So yeah, Zai is just a very, very special player, and I think TL should be blessed that he's gave them like some of the best years, it seems, of his career even now.
Right, who is the last name?
The last name.
There's a lot you could go for this one, to be fair. I've noticed you've set it up intentionally so that like people think they know what the fourth one, but do they? So who is it? Who's the fourth?
The fourth is somewhat, it's NA's prima donna, their golden boy.
That had to be, come on. But it's would be controversial if you purposely left him off, wouldn't it? Like, you had to come in here, come on. Like, go on, then hit me with it. Why is Arteezy? So, I mean, let's be real. The fans think, I mean, just narrative, he's supposed to be number one on this list all the time, and he always has been, essentially. Unfortunately, the defining point of Arteezy's career is that he hasn't won TI at this point, which kind of shows you how good he is aside from that, like, if that's the only thing people can sort of do is a knock on him.
Well, just to give you an idea, he has also never won a Valve event. He also has a distinction of having won zero TIs and zero majors.
The most funny one is the one where fucking he left Spirit and then like Eternal Envy won a major without him or whatever. Like, that's almost like the universe was just like, fuck you, Arteezy. Like, he's never allowed to win, apparently. Another cursed player.
Just to give you an idea of like, okay, so Zai had like 13 top fours, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm gonna guess Arteezy has something insane, like 10 or something already. Come on, hit me with it.
Well, Ramsey had like 15 top fours, Arteezy has 14 top fours, and he was in three consecutive finals and lost all of them, two of them back to back in game five. And again,
and he's had a gang of top fours at TI as well, right?
Yeah, he's criminal. He's gotten two TI top threes, each of them 4 years apart, and he's probably got his, and again, we'll come to it later on, but one of the reasons Ramsey deserves a place on this list, where Ramsey was a defining player of 2018, Arteezy was probably the defining player of like two separate eras. He was the probably the best player in the world in 2015, just before TI happened. Yeah. And he then has two individual peaks, but they're separated by like years. As in, like, he had a peak in 2021 and a peak in 2015, and they're 6 years apart. And so, like, that is absolute. Well, you could argue or say he was the best, like, carry player.
No, that's insane. Again, if people haven't been, obviously we said it earlier in the episode, but that is insane for Dota. Like, remember, the game changes completely every few years, like how people play the meta, the picks. Like, that's insane to have that longevity. It's impossible.
Yeah, and so when you just look at, like, Arteezy's career, again, he's someone that has played over a huge amount of teams. And I'll come on to the in-game server stuff, but just to give you an idea of the player, he has not got the distinction of Zybo, where when Arteezy goes to a team, he does not always make it better. He has problems, reportedly, from teammates throughout the game, and like that caused in the team. For example, he went to, like, the team secret team that was dominant, right? Internal Envy invited his friend over, and they thought it was going to make the team better. Bombed out in the very first bracket stage of, like, TI. He has lots and lots of, like, bombing out of tournaments.
There's a reason why a lot of drama also followed him leaving and joining teams, but that way, yes.
Yeah, and so I can't say the same things that I can say about, like, Zai, where, like, he went everywhere he went, he got better, he's so stoic. Arteezy isn't like that, but Arteezy's got more of that, like, prodigious, like, childlike genius, where when, in 2014, Arteezy started playing Dota, his rise could only be described as, like, meteoric, where he was playing, like, mid lane and beating, like, the best mid laners in the world, like, Mushi, at that time period, and he was dominating them, and he even ended up taking a tournament off of, like, one of the best Chinese teams off the time period, and he literally done it with a stack with his friends. Like, it was absolutely bonkers, like, what he was doing, and that was in 2014, and he's still a top player, like, attending TI, qualifying almost every single year, and we're in 2023. Arteezy, basically, from a carry perspective, revolutionised the insane farm efficiency, like, role, where he would take quadrants of the map and he would break down how to effectively farm them, like, perfectly. That's why he's famous for his Naga Siren. He's famous for his Terror Blade. His Illusion Hero Control is, like, micro. If you ever watch an Arteezy POV, I can only liken it to watching something like StarCraft 2, StarCraft Brood War, Protoss player Thorin.
Oh, Bisou.
Bisou. It's like watching a Bisou POV where it's, if you get motion sickness for people flying their...
Right.
That's what an Arteezy POV is like. It's sporadic, it's crazy. You don't even know sometimes what he's even looking at, but, like, he seems to have an idea. He's like he sees a small flash of a hero and he flicks his mouse over to it and comes back. It's very, very, very strange. He's, like, for many of, like, the mechanical, like, skills in the game, he's, like, infamous, like, for, not infamous, famous for them, like, manta dodging, where if you activate manta still, there's a 0.1 second frame of invincibility, and you can use it to dodge, like, abilities in the game. So Arteezy will stand in front of enemy teams and be like, I'm going to dodge the first spell you throw at me, try it, and, like, just do it. The depth of his, like, champion pool, because he came from, or hero pool, because he came from mid lane, is unbelievable. What he can play, I very much doubt there's almost anything in the game like...
Yeah, that's another thing. It's also not a joke. Even though in theory people are going to think, like, yeah, but some players have done that. Like, World Class 7, he can also play both. He can definitely play mid and carry.
But there's a funny thing happens where TI, he done really well at. They came third. They were one of the people that lost OG at 2018 in the iconic match of matches. Arteezy accidentally picks a support out of order, and so he has to play Phoenix for an entire competitive game against, like, one of the best Chinese teams, and end up winning the game on, like, Arteezy playing, like, support. And he's like, it's just absolutely, like, bonkers.
That's ridiculous.
He's one of, like, the infamous, like, famous, like, high MMR players, where he's, like, playing lots and lots of ladder. That's, like, a great way to track, like, whether or not Arteezy's going to be a good player, is how much, like, of the actual game he's playing at any given time. He's probably, helped define like so many different eras of like farming efficiency for like carries and like depth of like carry play. It's really, and what's, he was probably one of the first people who really showed the peak of what carry players could do at like a micro like capacity, like an individual like character control capacity. For example, I was just talking about Illusion Heroes, but he's like known for his like Lycan, and like Lycan can spawn like wolves to like control and scout the map, and he has like insane plays where he like denies like allied heroes at the last second using the wolf whilst he's on the opposite side of the map farming. And it's just, when you see the plays, they're just so insanely, like,
put it this way, you know, when people try to claim that in games like League and Dota, like, there's not that much micro compared to, you know, like StarCraft, and get, it's like there isn't, but then that's why when players like this come along, you're like, holy fuck, like, so wait a minute, in a game where there's not even supposed to be that much like wiggle room, you still like look that much better than most other players. Like, I agree, his mechanics are crack, mate.
Yeah, and so, and what's really, as he defined probably like what good mechanics would like look like and what like refined mechanics would look like very, very early on, and they have been like top tier for a very, very long time.
Oh, I know what you mean, because there's another thing. If you think about how early he came along, you said 2014 is when he's like breaking out on that ridiculous speed gaming team. Back then, like, it, people don't get this. Before him, you didn't go and just recruit high MMR, like stud fucking like mechanics players, like the Weehars and all them, Samael and fucking Miracle. Like, these players, like, essentially, they almost all their career to RTZ. Like, he sort of paved the way that, like, people realize, so wait a minute, if I just get some like god tier mechanical bull, we could just fucking put him like with the rest of the team. And if we have like good support off it, we can win the game. Like, he's almost like shown a blueprint how to win, even though it's ironic because he never won TI himself. And almost all of the other people did, you know, so those are the names, bloody hell.
The thing is, he does have, like, because he's played so many TIs, he does have, like, some TIs where he's playing brilliantly, yes, and they have early exits.
Yep.
So, like, for example, last year, he played, like, very well. They came top of the group, and then they lost every single game in the bracket and exited straight out of the tournament, winning no series. But he played well in, like, almost all of the games. And it was kind of like other people in the team like mis-executing on like timings and stuff. But there's been other games, like, for example, the series they lost against OG and the series they lost against LGD at TI, where he got his like top placings. RTZ could have played better. He probably lost Samael. You look at what Samael was doing. If RTZ had played better those days, RTZ might be a TI champion. Or he might have been, like, he, instead of LGD playing in that final, it would have been RTZ playing and EG playing against OG in that final. Would they have won? Who would have known? It would have been Epic, probably, again. All the games he plays. So he hasn't got, like, that consistency, but it's the peaks of what he showed, like, the high mechanical players, like, could do, and what, like, the limits that he could, like, play at, that really just, he brought, like, so many levels of, like, evolutions to like, Dota. He has a crazy, like, distinction, and this is, just to give you an idea, like, his breadth. So, he hasn't won a tournament since 2017, but he still has 13 Tier 1 LAN wins. So, he stopped winning 6 years ago. He hasn't won anything since then, because when he was on Team Secret, they were probably the team of the year, yep, but they didn't win TI, and he was the best player of probably 2015, and it was people trying to figure out how to beat, like, Team Secret, how to beat RTZ's, like, SF picks, that really, that was, like, that meta. That year at TI was, like, oh, how do you beat SF? How do you beat these, like, coming out the jungle with, like, 400 farm, 4 items, and you just can't kill the pick? He's... the only thing that probably I would put, like, against him is he has not been probably the best for his own career. He has probably made some of the worst teams.
I'll ask you a question then, because here's the thing. The obvious knock to me, the funny thing is, there's almost nothing as a player. Like, if people know CSGO, the analogy to me would be Nico. It's like, again, as just a player tip, an in-player, unfucking believable. Like, it's impossible to have a body of work like these guys have. But the difference is, the knock on both of them is, what with it, like, first of all, they had a lot of really great teammates and teams. And then secondly, sometimes the rumor goes they were the person behind why the teams blew up and why you didn't stay with certain players. Because first, like I say, with Arteezy, first of all, if I just look at some of his teammates, mate, How many of these guys fucking go and win TI before or after? Like, you had some amazing lineups. But then also, I'll use two of the most famous examples. One of the other things that has fucked his career up, like you say, is essentially he's a terrible GM for himself, because, man, sometimes he just leaves and then the team wins just after he leaves. And then look at some of the people he's had beef with. PPD and Kuroki. Homie, if you want to win, just be friends with those guys. That's why I give the Nico example. People know the most famous one in CSGO is Nico had a beef with Carrigan. It's like, you managed to have beef with like one of the GOAT players at his position. Like, you need him to win. You've got to find a way to stay with players like that, because these are people where, like, if you stick around people like PPD and Kuroki, the wins are going to come, mate. Like, they're the best at what they do. You're the best at what you do. Just make it work. Like, because that is the one thing from the outside, without knowing the relationship, that we can speculate on. Like, this guy does seem to have, like, zigged when he should have zagged, and also he definitely has had some weird times to, like, sort of have, like, a personal reason not to play with someone, you know, that otherwise was a mega player.
So, definitely. And, like, for example, like, at one of the majors where they were, like, losing, or, like, he was under, like, insane stress, he's, like, just randomly, like, shaved his head and, like, came out.
That's not a good sign. All I'm going to say is, if you do that, that's a red flag for everyone, I know.
Right, and he literally, he came out and said, he was like, you, or, like, someone said, or, like, Yatoro shaved his hair before he won TI. So it's like, So I think that gives, like, a small dose insight into, like, what some of the antics can, like, be like. In 2015, he had, like, the infamous moment where he's, like, pointing at himself and pointing at Kuroki, and he's in Kuroki's face, and, you know, Kuroki's a very, like, stoic and calm character. He was already very mature at that time period. And then 2 years later on, Kuroki takes a completely different team on TL with four different players and goes to win TI. Another example is, he was on Evil Geniuses with Samael. They were a top team all year. Artesian Universe leave to go to Secret. They bomb out in last place, and EG get third. Yeah. Like, they're not good looks. Like, these are.
If you actually look at his career, the stupidest thing is, if he just essentially, once he got an EG, never opened his mouth again except to call things in game. I'm pretty sure he's, like, won a bunch of TIs by now, hasn't he? Because as you say, the other thing that's criminal, like I say about lineups, is, mate, look how many times he's, like, the best number one, and then his mid lane is like Samael or fucking, or one time when obviously him and Eternal Envy were really good, they had fucking, what's his name, S4, when he was still, like, put to the best player in the world. Like, mate, he's had his help as well. Just somehow, like we say, just zigs every fucking TI, it feels like.
Well, because, and not even just that, like, for example, I thought about some of these failures. Like, the year in 2015 they lost, he blew the team up, reportedly, in terms of mental. But if you go look, like, the reason he wasn't, like, the reason they lost. For example, they're going high ground, S4's playing Storm Spirit. S4 is supposed to be one of the best players in the world. He uses all his mana bar, flies straight up to Burning's anti-mage. Burning's anti-mage, by the way. And gets him and Arteezy insta-killed with anti-mage's ultimate ability. And you're just like, it wouldn't matter who was
there. By the way, if you're a fan of one position carry players, especially Chinese, this game is a must rewatch. Like, not least because also the casters also know who Burning is nostalgia-wise, so they're loving it. This is a sick fucking game, the one where he dominates. I know the one you're talking about, yeah.
And the thing is, it's a great comeback, and Burning does amazing, but
it should never have happened, though, yeah.
Should never have happened. S4 should know not to do that, because there's nothing to... They're winning the game. All that play does is it either loses you the game, which it did, or the play goes off and you win the game 30 seconds quicker. So what would you rather have? Would you rather just win the game 30 seconds quicker, or possibly lose the game? Because that's what happened. Burning instantly gets out the way and zips you, and you kill two of your farmed cores, like, just straight off the bat. The other probably famous one, same tournament, S4 again, was when they lost to VP in the elimination match, where S4 has all the kills, but he keeps on walking into Earthshaker ultimates and getting himself insta-killed. RTZ is famously playing SF with Zai on Darkseer, as I mentioned previously, and they're just trying to fight against VP.
He's been inted a few times, but so this is the thing. Yeah. He has been inted a few times, guys. And even worse, like we say, he's getting inted by some of the best players ever. It's like, bro, it's my time to win. Can you play normally, please?
Yeah, and so, like, that is one of the things. Now he has actually gotten the roster stability. Basically, what happened was the OG team that had just won TI blew up. It blew up, and Fly and S4 went to EG. And that team was really, really good, like really, really quickly. And they got a top place in the 2018. They got third place, yes. One of the best teams. And they had like amazing games against OG. And Fly basically ended up, for the most part, sticking with that team for the entire time.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically that core of players basically stuck together. Himself, Crit, Fly.
Every player was good. I mean, they had Crit as well, like yeah. You're saying. Now actually was even in the four position. He wasn't like hard support. But, like, on paper, that team was supposed to be baller, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, he's also got a bunch of candidates for this list as, yes. Like, teammates. Like, for example, Fly... Out of the fact side, I said at a preface that he cannot be on it because he is a captain. He would be on, like, you'd be a candidate for this list. Crit, as well as a support player, would be a candidate for this. So he has had lots of talents. I can't say he hasn't. It's just sometimes through his own decisions or things outside of his control, he has had his, like, TI, like, failures.
By the way, but- that lineup particularly cracks me up as well because that one's like... You just aren't allowed to ever win, mate. Think about it, right? Your fucking carry position, Samil's your mid laner, and then, oh, we'll just have S4B off lane. Like, bro, like you could actually get, like, the fucking... This guy, as far as I can tell, Arteezy's career is just like Thanos or something. Like, you almost have the Infinity Gauntlet, man. You still fuck it up. You still lose somehow. Spoiler, if anyone doesn't know, he loses.
Yeah, and again, like, he's at TI again this year. And this for a distinction... 2023 has not been kind on his team this year. It's not been overall that kind to Arteezy this year, but the tournament before TI that just happened, he came second place. And that's usually a very good sign going into TI, not actually being either the best team, but being one of the high-placing teams. That's usually a good sign. So his sun has not set yet. There is a chance he is like... Even though on the DPC points, because they played done so badly, he isn't that high. There is a chance he could win a major, he could win a TI and lose that like badge, that mark of disgrace, that mark of Kane that he's kind of got going around with his career. But again, he has his time periods, has like chances with great like focused like teams. It didn't happen. That's a big mark for all four of these faces. They were all. You know what I mean? All of them actually did have basically chances. Yes. And that is like the beautiful thing. And in loads of different ways, they all, you know, failed for lots of like different reasons. You know, like Ramsey, other teams came up. Zai, would you call it? He had like the top placings, but he just couldn't probably get it over the line. Maybe his role didn't let him like carry as much as he could have. Maybe he was lit just at the cusp and it slipped away through his fingers because his like teammates failed him. Like, they all have their like reasons for why they cannot, but these are probably like symbolize the like four of the biggest like. And the one thing I would say about them is they're all talismanic of their regions. Like Zai in terms of like Europe, Ramsey in terms of Eastern. I didn't even do this, by the way. This just happened like randomly. Right. You know what I mean? Like Arteezy is like the defining player of like North America. He's like the only, like the joke is there are no North American players on the best North American team, and Arteezy's from Uzbekistan. So like raised in Canada.
Yeah, sure.
So like that is where we're at. We'll see where it goes. But, you know, just to, like, round out an amazing, like, micro-career, great mechanics, great depth of play, revolutionised so much to do with farming through, like, Eternal Envy. Probably a candidate across the average as one of the best players of, like, all time, and has a distinct period in 2015 as the actual best player in the world. Just, you know, if you want to talk about not winning TIs... Arteezy could tell you a couple of things about it.
Right, I do notice on this list, I mean, you set it up by saying no captains, but if you look, it's essentially a bunch of one players and Zai, who, like we say, sort of cheat farms the offlane anyway. Does that mean, as well as, like, no captains, in general, we're not putting supports on? Because we already mentioned when we were talking about maybe, like, another name would have been FY, he could easily have been on this list, right? So were we just not doing supports in general as a reason he didn't make the list?
No, so the reason, and this is a problem, okay, so I'll touch on this. It's very, very, very hard to evaluate supports first in any given like time period and in hindsight. I'll give you an example. Supports of like Dota can be doing like so many different things on the map. Like they could be like running top to gank a carry, or they could be in like the high ground stacking ancients, right? Now, The Stacking Ancients, a 4K MMR player could like do that. A 2K right. MMR player could do that, right? There's nothing mechanical about it. It's just decision making. But you kind of have to decide unto yourself whether or not that like play or like that like idea or that concept for your giving team is like the correct thing. For example, like FY is probably one of the greatest support players of all time, but he will play sometimes with carry players who don't like enable him, and because of his role, he must take a backseat. Now, FY's best time periods all correlate to when he's enabled and he's allowed to yes. roam the map and just kill people and fight people, and he has a bunch of top placings. He actually has 2 TI game yep. 5 losses, famously. He holds that distinction with Ami. He could have either been on the list, but for Andy's played for a huge like period of a long time period of time. The only thing that I think is not so much that like they would like banned like from the list or like couldn't make it to the list. Though, because I think if I was to have an honourable mentions, I think the FY would definitely like be on it. There'd be a couple other ones I could talk about, and FY is probably, if there was a fifth phase.
Right.
I would have him, okay. But I must decide like between them of like what they are, and it's not so much the fact that like they plays like because he has a supportive role, he cannot individually like make
not
a list.
Fair.
It is all to do with the fact of like what like support has like been in Dota has like changed like so much. Evaluating it at any given time can give you quite like contrasting and distinct things. And usually they are the vehicles of a team's strategy rather than, like, the defining players of a team's execution.
Yes. Oh, by the way, that was mainly biased. Like, I actually agree with the logic of how the carries. Like, let's be real, they're the ones that it is on their shoulders if they win or not sometimes. Like, there's a reason why, actually, it's quite rare, like we said, if maybe an RTZ didn't fuck up the tournaments, whereas, like, it's more just personal bias. Like, if someone, again, is a modern-day fan, they haven't watched Old School Dota, just load up any Fi fucking Rubik game and get ready for some of the most entertaining play you'll ever see in your life. It's fucking sick. But I agree. Yeah, like, I think a great list, though.
Yeah, yeah. The only other, players, like, from a carry perspective, just, like, touching them, would be Burning, because of Talisman, like what he like meant for like carries, and the thing is, of like majority of like great Chinese like carries actually ended up getting their TIs, but obviously almost in the like most like tragic
yes.
like way. For example, like Hal won it, but he didn't actually win it as
yes.
the like on a team that the carry mattered on. It was all just about like Zhao 8 controlling yeah. like the map, and he was just kind of not an afterthought, but it wasn't like
yes.
that meta. And the other one would be one of probably the lesser known players, but one of my favourite players, a carry player called Sylar, who revolutionised yes. the actual 1v5 like style.
Yes.
But the problem is even though Sylar's individual peaks at like TI might be higher, or how hard he carried than that of like Arteezy or Ramses, he played in an older era, and even though I'm not as disparaging, he does not have like the depth of play, the depth of style.
Yes.
He didn't play in the major era, the modern era, and so as good as he may have been, like I did, as much as I love them as like players, they're some of my favourite players, I had to be like kind of like fair and true to myself. Yeah.
And also, like, the Burning one is, like, it's mainly the earliest portion of Dota when he's at his best. I will say the true irony is, if people don't know, like, obviously, basically, all-star carries in Chinese Dota all want to be Burning, they all play in his style. And the maddest one is, I don't even know if Burning himself knows this. I actually want to somehow contact this guy and tell him, bro, you are aware that's essentially how, like, Chinese League of Legends played because of you, because of how you play. Like, essentially, the player Uzi in League of Legends owes, like, fucking Burning everything. Like that 4 protect 1, that wasn't invented for Uzi, guys. That was from a totally different game. That's just how Burning plays. You just put everything in his basket and he carries the game, basically. To paraphrase the legendary DMX, I just love when y'all in my Patreon crew give me a bigger piece of cake to chew a hole through. Because obviously, one of the ways I'm able to support myself and make content like I do on this channel is thanks to my Patreon community and the likes of Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and always, always a special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerky's Minion. opinion. Do you want to ask a question in my video AMA? Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest to interview? Maybe you want teasers, find out who I've already interviewed in upcoming episodes. Or do you want to take part in one of those lengthy online discussions that I do with my top patrons? Well, if any of these perks or more appeal to you, then put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link below.